Hello, listeners. A little bit of a breeze out there. And of course, today is Gardening with Gary. So we'll sort of learn, we're going to go back to our step three. If you recall, we had step one, setting up your veggie garden, some of the goodies you can do. And now today is going to be talking about that next stage. A little bit later in the show, I've got a beautiful recipe for a cake for Mother's Day. It's got lemonade sherbet on it. I've never made that before. Pink lemonade sherbet. How nice is that? So that's something that's going to be a delicious little treat. The kids can knock that up for Mum. It's a lemon loaf with cream, fresh icing, and pink lemonade sherbet. So how delicious will that be? But really, wasn't it nice to have that change over the weekend with that little bit of cool coming in? Been such a hot summer that I'm really looking forward to having this. And please correct me if I have a whinge about how cold it is, because I've been whinging about how hot it is. But it's interesting, isn't it, when you start to see that little bit of a change and how the trees are, the birds are all busy doing their little hide and seeks, and there's so many different flowers and trees to look at, and the changes is just, it's just gorgeous. I love the beautiful light at this time of year. So there's some really nice things happening. Pardon me. I think one thing that we have noticed since we've had this coronavirus problem within our community is the fantastic response on social media to gardening and the sharing and all the different tips. And that's one of the things we're going to be talking to Gary about this morning, is the fact that Kookaburra Organics have set up their Facebook. And I think that's great, because I'm on about, I look at about four or five different gardening sites, and you can just pop a question in there, or there's people who have got their gardens up and photos. And it is just a wonderful time. So it's going to be very interesting to see the changes that we have after we're clear of this particular virus, because so many people are growing, so many people are getting back in the kitchen and cooking and doing some really interesting things. So that's something, the positive step, I think, about this. But right now we're going to welcome Gary back. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Annette. And it is a positive aspect of life now.
I think so. I had this little thought the other day about the fact that a lot of people are going to go back into that, the idea that I think Americans call homesteading, you know, where people are producing again.
Yes, and it's quite amazing. For instance, the sourdough phenomena, it particularly is bobbing up everywhere, where people who haven't made bread before have now tried it and they're good at it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people are realising that, is that what you use flour for? You know, we're starting to, you know, analyse what we have done. And there's a lot of people who have been caught at home and, you know, twiddling their thumbs. But a lot of positives. Growing food and baking, preserving, all these you know, things that are happening are positives, and it's taking people back to their childhood or what they saw their grandparents doing.
Isn't it amazing when you start to, like, I follow a couple of different gardening groups, and I must say it's lovely to see Kookaburra's got their Facebook going. And, you know, you'll see a picture there, someone will put up something like, you know, what's happening with my snow peas? And then all of a sudden you've got all these different responses. And I think that is one of the nicest things, because, and you'll say, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Melbourne, or, you know, all these different ideas are coming forth, but it's not just a little local thing. It seems to be a real spreading phenomenon.
Well, I think we started up a group, Food Growing in the Pandemic, which is just free information. And we've been doing little videos of showing people how to, you know, put the seed in, how to harvest, when your broccoli should be ready to pick, how to pick it. All these little simple things that help people build up their confidence in growing, and how to, you know, manage the pest issue. And the pest issue is Australia-wide, and we're getting people from Western Australia, Victoria, following us, even a couple from New Zealand. And because growing food, the principles are the same. It's just you've got to then allow for your environment and possibly, you know, those extreme weather conditions, or what's your lowest temperature overnight? And but it's all solution-based, and all these people, if you have a problem, don't be scared to ask for help, because people are there and they're giving the, you know, the correct help.
There's one particular following that or social media that I love to look at, and it's called Humans Who Grow Food, and it's a worldwide social media site. Oh, just some of the countries. So all of a sudden you're going from England to Brazil to India to all these places, and just the abundance and the different, I think the different type of vegetables too is something that's very interesting.
That's right. And the common connection is they're all growing food and they're all one family. And I think that there are, you know, tips and tricks that people can do to in their veggie garden. Sometimes you've got to look at what's a similar location in the world to Southeast Queensland.
So, Gary, we're just going to have to ask you if you could just talk up just a little bit.
That'd
be great. That's fantastic.
I must have lost my voice. not eating my vegetables, one would say. Well, I'm seeing the thing that I like about it is young children and young mothers getting into the garden.
Yep.
And they've realised how much they've been spending, I suppose, at supermarkets and elsewhere. My oldest daughter, who lives in Melbourne, told me, she said the other day, and she's an essential service person, but the children are still at home being taught.
Mm.
And she said, "Dad, we're saving more money than we've ever done before." It's because you're not going out of the supermarket or spending money here, there and everywhere that you don't have to spend. And she's created a vegetable garden.
Mm.
Could have picked me up off the floor, but you know, it really surprised me because the message has got home. And, you know, circumstances like this could reoccur. We're seeing events, weather events, the pandemic, all sorts of things happening that are making people think about how they go forward.
Mm. We might just have to get you, sorry, Gary, just to talk a little bit louder or bring
louder.
Yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Just check my phone here.
Yeah.
It might be just a little bit closer to the mouthpiece, Gary, because occasionally you come through perfectly.
Same phone I use all the time, so how's
beautiful.
That?
Yeah. That's good.
That's the voice now.
Good.
So, Gary, one of the things that before, one of the points you made, which I think is so vital, is that confidence.
Confidence, yes.
Yes.
And if you make mistakes, gardeners make mistakes. We all make mistakes. I make mistakes.
Mm.
And you learn from that. And then if you've got something you just can't get your head around or it just doesn't work, as you said, go onto one of these groups and ask the question. No one will ridicule you.
Mm.
People are there to help. And that's one of the great positives coming out of everything now, is people are there to help.
So when we talked, it's probably 5 weeks ago now, seems such a long time, we did step one of doing your veggie gardens, but
yes.
We got it started. Step two, we started to actually look at what we're planting and what is in that season. Step three, where are we up to?
Step three is clearly that we need to have our winter crops in.
Mm.
You know, these cooler nights, now it was 6.5 overnight here.
Wow.
That shows you that's in the hinterland over the range, not on the coast, but that is cold winter. Now, that is the same as if you were down south in Victoria or Tasmania or South Australia. So broccoli, cauliflowers, your snow peas, your carrots, your beetroot, all these lovely warming foods for winter need to get into your garden right now. Now, fortunately, with those cold nights, it has knocked the pests.
Mm.
Now, the pests have been unbelievable this year. It was like the, you know, what will I say, 7 years of famine and 7 years of pestilence.
Mm.
Well, the cabbage moth has been in great numbers all over Australia. But the beauty with these cold nights, it knocks it on the head. And I'm seeing now evidence in the garden that the birds are on top of the grasshoppers, which is great. Because we're keeping them all at bay, now your vegetable garden can put the energy into the fruiting.
So with this change, like last week I was working and it was 32 degrees outside.
Yeah, I know.
And then now we're into this stage. Now my veggies, they're looking okay, But I'm not getting, like, my broccoli, for example. I haven't had any little heads of the actual veg coming.
Okay. Well, I understand what you're saying.
Mm.
Don't get impatient. It will occur.
Okay.
So they sometimes are deceiving. People get, oh, there's no broccoli head.
Mm-hmm.
I said, just wait. It'll appear. Then when it starts to appear, it'll be basically 10 days later that you're picking that.
Okay, yep.
And you've got to keep an eye on it. Now, I picked broccoli this morning. We started picking last week, which was great. And you can see that some of them in the same group planting that I planted haven't even formed the little heads.
Mm.
So what the plants are getting is this mixed message. As you said, 32 degrees during the day. They're going, hang on, this is not winter, but it really is. And we just got to persevere, so to speak.
So when it's cold like this, like in those days, I've done a couple of wicking beds because, you know, where I am, I get the wind, I get a little bit of salt and everything. So I've got one that's, this is interesting, I think it is. I have one that's growing prolifically, but I get pests. One that's got more sun, that I don't, it's not as prolific, but I don't have any pests.
Well, pests, in the plant kingdom, there's always the weak and the sick.
Yep.
It's like anything. And pests always target the weakest plant. Aphids, for instance, can detect the colour spectrum of plants and can hone in on the ill ones. And once they're in your garden, they tend to spread. Now, if it's grubs and grasshoppers that are destroying that other plant, you know, you can't take it for granted that they won't move to the other plant. They will when they exhaust the other plant.
Hmm.
So you've got to keep on top of that.
So with watering in this time, let's talk about that because it's cold in the afternoon, isn't it?
Yes. I always remember a mechanic I knew in Melbourne, and he used to tell me that the busiest time of the year for people with cracked heads was winter.
Hmm.
Because he said, people just make an assumption, it's cold, so I don't need to put water in my radiator. Right? Now, because it's cold, people make the assumption, I don't need to water my garden. Now, those winds we had the other day were just absolutely abnormal. And they are drying winds. So the southwest, westerly winds in winter are cold, but they're drying. If we get easterly breezes, like which you would be subject to where you live, they're all more of the mushed air. So that is good for your plants, but the southwest and the westerlies dry out plants, and the plants with more foliage, e.g. a snow pea that's right up its trellis, 2 metres high, has more foliage exposed to the wind. Thus, it dries out quicker. So you've got to make sure your soil is moist. And if the forecast is for a cold snap, you want to make sure your garden is well watered prior to it. It's very hard to save everything after the event.
So cold snap, just make sure you get out there, what, in the morning so that it's got time to...
Yes, if you've got the time, get your garden watered, and there's probably plenty of people home still. So water your garden in the morning at the base, not on the foliage. It's not good to get it on the foliage. So at the base, make sure they're moist, and if we're going to have a cold snap, your plants are going to survive and not get stressed. For instance, snow peas that dry out, and if you're in an area like I am and you get a frost, they will die, even though they are a winter vegetable.
So I think that these things is like, someone was saying on one of these sites the other day that they lost their snow peas, and someone was saying that there's a particular thing that hides in the soil that snaps off the peas and beans.
Leaf cutter, grub. But the problem here, and it is not the snow pea itself, it's actually, I've had a few people asking me the same question.
Mm.
Now, I had two daughters who thought they were really going to show their dad how to grow food, and of course they went and bought seedlings. Now, you don't buy snow pea seedlings because snow peas, like carrots, like beetroot, all have tap roots. And it is extremely difficult to get a seedling out of a punnet without any vibration. Now, when you plant a seedling of a snow pea, you'll be lucky to get any snow peas off it. They just grow about, 30 centimetres and then die. Because you plant them direct by seed and you will get a very robust plant. So there are some plants you just mustn't buy as a seedling. And I keep, people think I'm bashing the old bandwagon, but if you think about it and you look at the way a snow pea or bean germinates, you'll see how the taproot goes down. Now, when you've got it in a punnet, it is extremely difficult to get it out of the punnet without any vibration and transplant it in the soil without it stressing. They are so sensitive. So if you plant it by seed, and that's one of the things I've put on this Facebook page, we actually show everybody step by step what they need to do.
So, Gary, what we might do is we might go to our sponsors and we'll come back and can you take us through some of these things and what we should be planting and the best way to do that?
Yes, so it might be a good idea because we're coming up to the full moon.
Yes.
The week, and the week after that is root crop time. So it might be a good one to show people how they can grow their carrots and parsnips.
Hang with us and we'll talk to you shortly. And welcome back to Community Kitchen. Of course, we've got Gary from Kookaburra Organics Online, our monthly gardening guru. Welcome back, Gary.
Thank you, Annette. Thank you very much.
Harriet had to sort of come in before one of the people at the radio station. She said, you know what? I didn't think that anyone else gardened by the moon, but, man, I haven't told anyone. So, Harriet, I've told the world.
Well, congratulations. We have a lady named Mel, who works at the Sunshine Coast Private Hospital, has her own bees, makes her own bread, does preserving, has done a series of workshops with us to feed her five, and all of the staff and surgeons that thought she was nuts. And since the pandemic and lockdown's been on, guess what? She's the popularity queen.
Mm.
Oh, how do you do this? How do you do that? And she said, isn't it a great change and been a think people thinking a bit nutty because you're growing your own food. So she's not alone out there, and she also said once she thought the moon was all woo-woo stuff and started to realise how important it is to the growing cycle.
Well, Harriet said she's always remembered that the incoming moon, she plants out all her foliage veggies.
Green leafies, yeah.
Yeah, and the outgoing is all of her root veggies.
That's right, and we're coming into that at the end of the week. It'll be full moon, I think, on Thursday or Friday.
Thursday.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I just want to say one of the things that's so positive about these groups. Now, some good friends of ours, Norell and Steve Kaiser, who I've spoken to you about before. Norell was listening right now, I know that, because she's just put up some pictures while she's listening to us on radio, showing an example of cutting the head off the broccoli. And now what has happened 2 weeks later is all these floriettes of broccoli starting to appear. Because that's one of the little tricks that people realise that when they get their head of their broccoli, they just pull the plant out. But if you leave it there, it produces a lot more.
Yeah.
And there's sort of things that are really vital for people who are new at growing food. And broccoli is a popular vegetable. Now,
let's talk
root crops.
Yes.
Now, you can grow carrots, parsnips, beetroot. Onions in our location if you plant the seed direct. If you go and buy a seedling, just like snow peas, they've got one taproot, and you're more likely when you take it out of its punnet, put it in the ground, stress it, and it will sit there for weeks and do nothing. And you'll look at it and you'll look at it and you go, come on, what am I doing wrong? I hit it with fertilizer, I do this, I do that. It's because it was stressed at the beginning. So if you've got carrot seed, parsnip seed, beetroot seed, plant the seed direct. But before you plant it, get about, depending on the length of your row or how many you're planting, get a handful of washed river sand, mix the seed in so you get an even distribution of the seed when you're sprinkling it out in your row. And you just bring the soil over the top of them, and with the back of a rake, gently pat them down because a lot of root crop seeds like to be sort of tight in their bed, so to speak, tucked under the doona. And then use some shea cloth or hessian bags over the top to take that direct sunlight off the row to stop them drying out. Because if the soil dries out and it gets like 32, as you said the other week, it makes those seeds not viable anymore. The seed becomes sterile and just doesn't do anything. So after about 5 or 7 days, you go down late in the afternoon, you lift your hessian bag or shade cloth up, and you should see little germination of the seed. So if they've all germinated, lift your shade cloth hessian bag off, allowing that seed to acclimatise over the night and, you know, to be ready for the sun in the new day. And that's how you acclimatise them, and that's how you get your seed to germinate really quickly.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because I planted some leek directly from the seed.
Yes.
But the thing was that I forgot that step of the hessian bag.
Did they come up?
They did, but then they pretty much died.
Yeah, because the heat was probably too much.
Yes.
Now, the trick of the hessian bag and the shade cloth is keeping the moisture around the seed so it doesn't dry out. And it also keeps the soil cold. Now, we think about leeks, carrots. We want to eat them in the winter with the cauliflowers and broccoli. And good old roasts come to mind. Now, those seeds will love that soil to be cold, so they get that kick start when they germinate. And that's the secret of growing root crops. And do not fertilise them.
Oh.
People like going out there and spraying foliar sprays on their carrots, and all you'll end up is with beautiful tops and very little underground, because root crops like growing in soil that is not nitrogen rich. That means after a leafy green or fruiting annuals have been grown in that soil, root crops like that soil because it's not nitrogen rich, and that means they put the energy into the bulb under the ground.
So we can't mix our foliage plants with our root crops.
Oh, you can if you give them enough space. If you give them enough space. And you've got to keep your thinking about, what did I grow there before? So, for instance, if you're going to plant potatoes, you don't put your potatoes where your eggplant, capsicums or tomatoes have been, because they're all the same family.
Nightshades, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how you create disease.
How do we remember all this, Gary?
Well, one of the best ways is have designated beds or designated locations. I have got root crops planted in certain areas, and what I do is I mark that. I recall it, what I've done in that bed. So if I'm going to plant the root crops, they're going to be the next bed over from it. So I don't repeat that.
Keep moving along.
Keep moving along. And there's nothing wrong with growing some leafy greens in amongst some of these plants. They'll still grow, but they won't be as nitrogen rich.
So then what about our foliage at the moment? You know, when you're talking about the root veggies, do we wait now until the moon changes to actually plant out the foliage crops?
Well, we at the moment, before the full moon, leafy greens and fruiting annuals, like your broccoli, cauliflowers, snow peas, all these should be in the ground before the full moon. That's, we're talking about seed here.
Yep.
If you're buying a seedling, it's a little bit different. And most seedlings are about 4 weeks old when you see them in places to buy. And what you do is you just work 4 weeks back where was the moon. That's how I make sure they're planted in the right cycle.
Okay. So seedlings, you work 4 weeks back.
Yes. And don't buy, I know people, people say, I bought carrot seeds. And one of my seedling sellers at Yandina, Nelson, tells me, I say, why do you grow these from seed? And he goes, people want them. And he said, you can't argue with people. They tell you. And he knows they're not going to come to much.
Well, do you know, I did a gardening show up at Maryborough. And, of course, we went over to have a look at the cooking show, sorry, and went over to have a look at the gardening section at the show there. And there was a community group, and they had a massive seed-saving area. and I bought some wonderful seeds. And you know what I loved about it was things like Bob's climbing seeds, you know, Nellie's lettuce. So within that little group, they have this, you know, all the people who must shine at growing these particular things.
And when you get access to those, Annette, you know, Nellie's and Bob's might be heirloom that's been passed on by the family. And quite often you'll find a variety of something. Beans and tomatoes come to my mind that have been handed down through generations, and they'll be a little bit different, and you may not even be able to buy them this day and age.
Well, my dad always had two jars in the ute, and they were always watermelon and pumpkins. You know, because we every year we'd have the burn after Christmas, after winter, and have little trickle burns down the creek and clean up, we'd always have these pumpkins and watermelons planted so they were ready for Christmas time. And it was just something that you always had with these jars of seeds.
Yes, and they just, and the amazing thing about this, they used to just go and push it into the ash and walk away and come back and harvest. They never used to water them. Farmer here across the road does the same. He plants these pumpkins all over the place, and he just goes back, oh, they'll be probably ready by now, and he goes over with his ute and just throws them on the back, and the cattle have eaten around them, and deer and all that, and here's all these pumpkins.
So, Gary, let's just talk about that ash for a moment, because I know one of the workshops that we did, you planted potatoes, and you cut your potatoes, and then you rolled them in ash.
Yes, well, what I do... if you're going to plant potatoes, you look at how many eyes you've got on a potato, and you can get 2 to 3 sections of a potato and cut it with the eye. And the cut edge, you dip it in wood ash to seal it. That stops any bacteria or, you know, fungus getting onto a potato, and you can plant them straight into the ground. Now, wood ash has a very high level of potassium in it, and potassium is very vital for all vegetable plants in forming, helping the growth and the fruiting of that plant. So if you've got wood ash, besides that potassium, has a lot of magnesium, a bit of calcium, and it's about probably half the strength of lime. So it also can help acidic soil on going to the alkaline aspect. So wood ash, but you never dump it. You must use it if you're just putting a bit of salt on your dinner or a bit of pepper, just lightly. You don't go and go, oh, Gary said that, I'll throw heaps on it. Plus, wood ash around seedlings deters slugs and snails. So there's a bonus with wood ash all the time.
Now, with everyone being at home, pardon me, and not going out for coffee, they're probably keeping their grinds a lot more.
Yes.
How often can you put that into your garden?
Well, the great thing about used coffee grinds is that whilst the material is organic, it has come from the earth, it is slow-release nitrogen. And that is that if you put it, spread it around your garden, you're letting go some slow-release nitrogen into your vegetable garden without saturating it. So you're controlling it, right? And the coffee grinds also deter slugs and snails. Another natural deterrent. It saves people running down to a hardware store and going, oh, I better buy this because it's $15. And I spread it, and all of a sudden your vegetable prices are starting to escalate because you're spending on money on all these inputs you don't need. Now, I've got on one of my Facebook pages, my oldest granddaughter, who's 9, gave us a demonstration on how to extract the coffee grinds from a coffee pod that Mum and Dad use. You know, those little pod machines?
Yes.
And she's showing how you actually extract it, put it on there, and then you put it on the garden. And I thought, yes, and I'll bet a lot of people don't realise that those little coffee pods actually have gold in them.
Definitely. Now, Gary, we're almost about to finish. Can you just go back now and tell us the sites that people, apart from your kookaburra, where you'll...
Well, I have put up a special Facebook page because everybody was at stay at home. And it's called Growing Food in the Special Period. It's a long one. During coronavirus pandemic. So growing food in the special period during coronavirus pandemic. Now, the reason I use special period, many people may recall that during the Cold War, I'm giving away my age, the Cold War between the US and Russia, Cuba was basically exiled. They couldn't get food sent in or food out, and they had to use ingenuity. And they called it the special period, and they ended up growing all their own food and making their own fertilizers whilst that period. And they became very self-sufficient, and their population health improved amazingly.
Well, that's fantastic. I'll repeat that again for people so they can write it down if you don't have a pen and paper handy. Gary, thank you very much for your knowledge, and we'll talk to you in a month.
Thank you very much, Annette.
Nice to talk.
Bye-bye.
Bye now, and we've had Gary, of course, from Kookaburra. And back to Community Kitchen. I love having Gary from Kookaburra on the show. We always learn so much. Got to get that memory thing going. I knew there was a reason that my little legs didn't last long enough. But it is Mother's Day. I'm going to pop this recipe on the website probably this afternoon or the morning. A lemon loaf with cream fraiche icing and pink lemonade sherbet. So it's a basic cake, 150 ml of salted butter. I'm going to go just through it quickly, but for those who don't want to write it down, have a little look later. A cup of caster sugar, 2 tablespoons of finely grated lemon zest, 2 eggs, 2 cups of soft raising, 1/2 cup of cream fraiche, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, and 1 teaspoon of rose petals. Now, for your icing, 1.5 cups of cream fraiche and 1/2 cup of icing sugar, a little bit like a cream cheese icing, and pink lemonade sherbet, a half a teaspoon of citric acid, 1 tablespoon of icing sugar, 1 tablespoon of raspberry jelly crystals, and 1/2 a teaspoon of bicarb. Simple thing, 180 degrees oven, 160 fan forced. Place your butter and sugar and lemon zest in a bowl and beat that for 5 minutes until pale or fluffy. You know the regimen of making a cake. Add eggs one at a time. Add the flour and cream fraiche in alternating batches, starting with the flour until combined. Stir in your lemon juice and spoon into a lightly greased loaf tin, or you can do a round tin or a love heart tin or whatever gets you going. Bake for 1 hour in the preheated oven, or until you stick the old wooden skewer in, it comes out clean. Cool in the tin for about 14, 15 minutes. Turn onto a wire rack and cool completely. Place the cream fraiche and the icing sugar in a bowl, and you're going to whisk that until really light and fluffy. Spread it over the cake and refrigerate. Now, to make the sherbet, mix the citric acid, the icing sugar, the jelly crystals and bicarb. And to serve, just sprinkle the sherbet and the rose petals over the cake. Now, if I could take a little snapshot of it, it is so pretty. It's and it's a little bit like that, I'm assuming, it's a little bit like that yogurt cake that Nigella makes. And what it does, it just gives that beautiful moistness. And the cream fraiche would do that the same as the yogurt, which would just be delicious. But, you know, you could even make individual little cakes with that. Of course, you'd have to reduce your time. And I would say that if you were going to do a whole hour for one of those cakes, you'd probably have to come back to about 20 minutes.
Yeah, it'd be more than 15.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd be watching that. But if you were going to go to individual cupcakes, but normally I find that if I do a cupcake or convert my butter cake, I think I cook my cupcakes for about 15, 20, and then my other cakes about 35. So I think that works out. While we were talking to Gary before, one of the guys from the station here just slipped a form in front of me, and it's a media release from the University of South Australia. So what's happened, they're talking about COVID-19 has sparked a rush to establish home gardens and a desire for self-sufficiency. And how successful are these grow your own attempts, and is there a risk that people will find themselves out of pocket? It does cost. I think that's one thing that's very surprising. It does cost. But, you know, when it comes to your garden soil, There's a lot of landscape yards that have it made up in bulk. You can take your trailer there. You don't have to buy it from the bags, and go along and support some of those businesses too, because they do make some really good blends. So what the researchers investigate was the productivity, the efficiency, and the potential financial saving of almost 100 food homes established by 34 people in South Australia. Now, the overlooking garden setup costs were 79% of people who established vegetable gardens were estimated to spend more than $250 on their annual grocery bills, according to Dr. Georgia Costin. So she is an expert in urban food production. And considering the setup cost of a food garden, $500, 60% of the study gardeners were also calculated to break even within 5 years. Applying a wage rate to the time spent growing a food garden, the researchers found that just over 1 in 6 of the study gardeners produced enough food to cover their ongoing garden costs and effectively pay themselves the average minimum wage, the Australian minimum wage of $18.93 per hour. So when you're out there slogging it out, just think, I am getting paid for this, $18.93 an hour. So that's wonderful. But I think that, just on a personal note, I think the fact that it's good for the getting out in the fresh sun and the fresh air, the exercise, all these things are just brilliant. But going back to the article, the swell of new food gardeners is a wonderful outcome from the restrictions of the COVID-19 crisis, but we need to ensure these efforts are not in vain. So I think that's quite interesting. I'll have a little look further into that particular thing to see what's happening. So they're also talking about installing the right irrigation system is crucial to save time and money, growing food in different ways, a mixture of in-ground beds, raised bed, wicking beds, fruit trees, or keeping chickens helps to provide more consistent and diverse year-round harvests. So we'll follow that up a little bit. But just revising a few of the things with Gary, I will pop these details up onto the website so you can have a look at that. At twoldducks.com. Winter crops in, so we're looking at all our broccolis, beetroots, carrots, and isn't that nice to think about the fact that with the cold nights, the pests are going to drop down a little bit? We've had so many moths and butterflies in the garden. It's incredible. And be patient. That's one of the things that I really appreciated from that talk this morning. Because of this heat fluctuation from hot days to cool nights, the plants are going through that little bit of a confusion. So be like me, be a bit more patient. And the cold snap, water in the morning at the base, not on the foliage. So and remembering also the more foliage that's exposed to the wind, it dries out quicker. So that's something you're going to have to really look at, because there is a real undercurrent of breeze out there this morning. And I notice that people be wearing vests and jumpers. So I think that's lovely. But with your veggies, don't forget the tap roots, a direct seed into the soil, and follow that full moon, which we've talked about. It's coming on Thursday. So that's lovely. And we can do the carrots and parsnips and beetroots and all the goodies, which are just beautiful. A little bit of river sand. And I know that when I did a workshop with Gary, they had a tin, and his partner Paula had just put the river sand in there and put the seeds, and they just sprinkled it like a salt shaker all through the garden. It was very effective. Sprinkle with the soil, cover with soil, rake out gently, and that Hessian bag. Now, if you go to your fruit shop, a lot of them will have bags out the back. I know they sell them for a few dollars. One of those is just perfect, because it's you can wet it and it's not too heavy. And 5 to 6 days to five to seven days to germinate. So that's wonderful. And do not fertilize. Interesting, isn't it? you know, you're starting to think about it. But you could use that the coffee grinds because it's slow release, so therefore you, eventually down the track, I guess you could do that. And it's good for the deter slugs and snails and all those goodies. So we've had a very resourceful morning. Next week, of course, we're going to be having a look what's out and about. The week after that, of course, we'll be talking to Sarah from Basilea. And isn't it wonderful how innovative people have become, because Sarah's business, of course, they sell edible flowers and herbs to a lot of the restaurants. So a lot of that industry has disappeared. But being innovative person as she is, she started doing her own seedlings. So you can go on site and have a look at that too, because keeping all these local businesses involved is in their business and their sidelines is just an absolute boost. I heard on the way in that one of the great big sports clubs opening up to do takeaways soon. And there's a lot of little restaurants and hotels are doing that around. And I think even if you're not a big takeout advocate, it doesn't hurt to keep those little businesses going and support them. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think, excuse me, Annette, I think the idea is once a week go and support one of the restaurants.
Yes.
Because if they go, I mean,
yeah,
come on, we are going to want them to be around. So
yeah,
that's our plan, that once a week.
Well, that's a lot of staff too that you have to think about, that a lot of these people have front staff, they have kitchen staff. So even if it's a sort of a bit of a treat night and get some sort of thing. But yes, I think that you're right. We'll be wanting these people to stay open. So we have to be supportive. So have a little bit of a look. You know, with the social media now, you can do a lot of searches, for local things. There's so much going on with poultry delivery, egg delivery. There's bulk buys. There's people doing some wonderful things. So look out for that. I noticed that Jackie that we had on our show that does a lovely loose leaf veggie from up at Mount Mee, she has little drop-off points along with lover berries and all those types of people who are doing banding together and doing some great things. So great to support that. I'll be back next week. Have a wonderful week. Enjoy this new change of weather. And follow that moon for the plant cycles. Thanks for joining me this morning.